begin this morning with a very interesting...
Oh, wait, do you have to record it? Okay, good. All right, so we're going to begin this morning with the very interesting comments of the Taz in Siman Tzadi Ches, Seif Katan Beis. So in the Noseh Kelim, we're going to frequently encounter discussions of related topics that are occasioned by the central discussion, but they're not directly related to it. This particular observation of the Taz deals with a frequently asked question: what exactly constitutes te'ima? So we have to be careful not to confuse our use of the English word tasting as an equivalent with the Hebrew word. Translation is infrequently accomplished by one word equivalent, since all words have connotations in their own local literature and usage. So when one's wife asks for a taste of your appetizer, she wants to eat a little bit of it, right? In that context, taste requires ingestion. On the other hand, an enophile, which is a wine aficionado, or a degustateur, which is the official wine taster in a restaurant, may only swish the wine around in his mouth and then spit it out in order to sample it with his palate. That's also called tasting. So we want to avoid concluding anything on the basis of the simple meaning of a word, but we do, of course, want to be cognizant of it. So just to broaden the discussion, one reason that we might conclude that in order to violate an Isur D'oraisa when tasting the flavor of Isura Mishum Tam Ki'ikar, one would need to swallow, is the halachic character of Achila. Every Isur Achila in the Torah, including Inui Yom HaKippurim, requires hana'as hagaro. Stated a little more analytically, the mechayev in Isur Achila is hana'as hagaro. And the same can be said, by the way, for Bracha Rishona, the matir that allows us to eat. So Birkas HaMazon occasions great discussions among the Acharonim, and well known, of course, is the Shita of the Minchas Chinuch, that there's a dual requirement of hana'as hagaron and hana'as hameyayim. What may be very interesting for us, by the way, just parenthetically, given the Gemara in Perek Basra d'Avodah Zarah and the Maimra of Rabbi Yochanan we studied so carefully, is his explanation of the Minchas Chinuch for why the minimum shear for bracha must come within bichdei achilas pras. He says that eating in a very spread out fashion does not constitute the required hana'as hagaron. So in this, he disagrees with the Prima Gadim, who wants to say that since the driver for benching is svia, being satisfied, the amount of time should be irrelevant, since there may still be svia. The Minchas Chinuch, by arguing that there are two drivers, hana'as hameyayim and hana'as hagaron, delivers a rationale for requiring achila, chila shiur, bichdei achilas pras.
So how are we defining hana'as versus hana'as
hagaron? So hana'as hameyayim is nutritional, right, which may be more than bichdei achilas pras, and the requirement, the Minchas Chinuch explains, for bichdei achilas pras is that it's a hana'as hagaron inyan. So that's, he uses that to argue with the Prima Gadim, right? Okay? So he says that this would otherwise, one would be missing the mechayev of achilas pras. So this offers an interesting twist on the Gemara Avodah Zarah, right? That in order to have tamo or mamasho, the mixture has to be in bichdei achilas pras. Why? In order that there be hana'as hagaron. Anyway, it's just a little aside. Found it interesting. Okay? So is it permissible to taste something to see if there's the presence of tama disura if one doesn't ingest it? If it's possible to detect the flavor of the isur with the tip of the tongue, would that be permitted? So we're going to begin with the drisha and Seif Katan Aleph. Now the drisha, for those who don't know, it belongs to a three-part commentary on the Torah by Rabbi Yehoshua ben Alexander of Kohen Falk, who was the Talmid Mufhak of both the Marshal and the Ramah. So this places him in Poland, Krakow to be specific. And he called his commentary the Beis Yisroel. He's also the author of the Sefer Me'ilas Einayim on Choshen HaMishpat. And both works, by the way, are staples of the study of Sifrus HaHalacha. So the Drisha is the dialectical part of the Beis Yisrael. In the other two sections, the Prisha and the Hagos, we find explanations of the simple meaning of the Torah and notes on the Darkei Moshe with expansion of the law from later Chut composed after the appearance of the Torah in the Beis Yosef. Now, the Hakdama to the Sefer is not to be missed. And I want to tell you, in this yeshiva, you have many devotees of the Hakdamos to Svarim, including Rav Simon Shlita and Rav Sarfati Shlita, both of whom share this enthusiasm with me. So I'd like to read a little of the Hakdama to the Drisha, since it's the first time that we're really encountering him with you this morning. And of course, it's in the Or Chaim volume. And if you page through, and there are different, you know, pagination, you'll see that the Mechaber begins with a history of Torah Shebaal Peh through Sof HaRah in the days of Ravina and Ravashi. He then discusses why the Poskim found it necessary after the close of the Talmud to compose the works that they did, and then in an oft-cited section spells out five reasons why the Beis Yosef isn't enough for Psak Halacha. And I think you'll see why I like this. Okay? So you see Atama Rishon, Atama Sheni, see if you can find it. Okay? All different pages. If the Hakdama is there. Does anybody find it? Because we have all different editions. I have a totally different edition than you have at home. It's a long Hakdama in poetry. And you have to be looking in Or HaChaim for this. I'm sorry, I can't give you. It says Ha'achad. It starts out with the words Ha'achad, Jehu Zal. So it's the Beis Yosef. You'll see paragraph after paragraph of reason, reason, reason. Let me start while you look for it. I'll read slowly. Ha'achad, the first reason that the Beis Yosef isn't enough for Psak. Jehu Zal, the Mechaber. Kisavo v'chibro l'fi rochav sechlo. Vidato Atzlula. So it was written according to his great intellect. Uvikiyu so hagadola. Umitoch kach irbev devarim. Therefore, he concluded a lot of stuff, and he mixed it all together. V'kosav l'shona mishnu, gemara, v'divrei apolskim, v'atshuvos hashayachim, lo so din. Upersham hakol yachad. V'kosher l'choma ayein, l'varer mitocho, Beor Hadin Shetzarichlo Mitoch Dvarav Hamaur Bavim. So it's difficult for those without the ability to organize all the materials the Beis Yosef might have done in his own head to see anything more than a mishmash of Deos.
He's writing this post Shulchan Aruch or before Shulchan
Aruch published? He's writing this around the same time. Okay, it's actually post. Hasheni Shehu Meirov Harifuso Vikiuso. So the Mechaber complains that particularly in Hoshana Mishpat, the Beis Yosef doesn't adequately spell out what's obvious to him. Ashlishi, Sharav Hiksha Bakama Makomas Kushos al Divrei Apostim. So far he's respectful. It's all because we're not the equal of the Beis Yosef, right? Hashlishi Sharav Hiksha Bakama Makomas Kushos al Divrei Apostim, or be proud al Divrei Atur. V'sasar divrehan v'chashavan l'towin, and he considered them wrong. V'lifamim heinichan b'tzirich iyun. But if you look carefully, racharei iyun be'omek oso sugya, yirei le'einayim shedivrehan olin yafeh. Actually, he's wrong. It's a fairly common criticism of Beis Yosef, by the way, and probably the raison d'etre of the Drisha, who is himself, of course, not infallible, as we're going to see today with the Taz, right? So remember Rabosai, as I like to say, that a man encounters, I say this on the basis of my own experience, that a man encounters in his lifetime only two people who are never wrong, his wife and her mother, right? Everyone else makes mistakes. Okay? Haravi. Shelo nasan beis Yosef libo ledaktek bedivrei bal haturim kiraui. He didn't get into the tour, right? Why? Ukfar kasafti shamedaktek heite bidvar of zal yira shemiruma zimbo kama v'chama inyanim asher kasfu atosus v'arosh ushar mevarshim umachabrim. There's a reason why the beis Yosef seems to neglect the underpinnings of the tour in the Tosfos and the Rosh. V'garam leharav beis Yosef zeh asher minu rav haya ikur limudai b'divrei harif Rambam. So we've noted before the influence of the Rif-based Midrash on the beis Yosef. According to the beis Yisrael and his Hakdama here, it skews his view of the tour and desensitizes him to the Ashkenazic dialectic. The fifth reason why the Beis Yosef is not sufficient according to the Drisha. Hachamishis, depamim harbe agav rihita o chorfaso, derav, perish perushim asher lianius dati al pi ms einamolim. So Rabosa, we can see that the Beis Yisrael comes to remedy these deficiencies of the Beis Yosef through proposing clearer explanations of the language of the Torah in the Prisha, through elucidating the underpinnings of the Halacha and the Gemara and the Rishonim and the Drisha, and by supplementing his rulings with citations from later Shu'ot in the Hagos, the three parts of the Beis Yisrael. So the first Drisha that we're going to discuss here is really paradigmatic. The Drisha is commenting on the Torah's citation of Rava's din in the Gemara that a kfeila tase a tarovus mim sheino mino for the flavor of the Yisurah. He cites the Gemara, if you have chulin here, from Kol HaBasar, Kuf Yud Aleph Amud Beis. I'll give you a sec. Kufyat Aleph Amud Beis. Two rulings of Rav Kahana. So Yasev Rav Kahana Ahuya de Rav Yehuda, the brother of Rav Yehuda, Kame de Rav Huna, the Yasev Kamar, and he was sitting, and these are what he said. He said, A ki'arash malach ba basar, asur lechol ba roseach. So what's the first of the rulings of Rav Kahana? One may not eat hot food from a kli in which meat was salted. As Rashi explains, look in Rashi. Dibur Masil Kara Shemalach Ba Basar Asur Lechol Ba Roseach. Lefisha Nivla Ba Hadam V'nosein Tam Rishon Have Ki Isur Gamur. The blood that's been drawn out through the process of salting is Asur, as we shall learn the Siyata Deshmaya in Hilchos Malicha, even though we do not encounter it directly. So what's Rashi's reacting to the din of not bar not, no same time bar no same time, that awaits us in several weeks. There we see that fish that was served hot on a fleshic plate may still be eaten with kusach habavli, a milchic dip. The meat flavor in them has been weakened, as it were, by multiple stages of transfer. The meat in the to the water in the pot to the fish, and then mixed with the kusach habavli. So this is what we call no saint tam bar no saint tam, or I like to call it derivative tam, or weakened tam, or diluted tam. A few stages removed from the first transfer from the meat to the water to the walls of the pot. So Rashi means to distinguish from this when he says, here, v'no saint tam rishon. That is, the blood in the walls of the pot is not multiple levels of transfer, but a single level. That's what he's referring to. Okay? The second ruling of Rav Kahana appears at first to contradict the first one. Utsnon she chatascho bisakin mutar la achlo bekusach. So if you had a radish that's cut with a fleshic knife, you can eat it with the milchic dip. Wait a minute. Even though the sharpness of the radish draws the fatty meat residue from the surface of the knife, knife. The radish may still be eaten with milchix. So Gemara asks, my tama. So Baye offers the first explanation. The two cases, the kli with embedded dam and the knife with meat flavor, are logically different in that the dam's isura, whereas the meat flavor in the knife is out there. When the knife got, you know, rendered fleshig, it wasn't isur. Amar Baye, hai he tera balava, hai he isura balava. So Rava responds, Amar le Rava, ki bala he tera, mai have sof sof, hai he tera de asili de isurahu, de isura kachel. What difference does it make that the meat flavor is mutter when it's first observed by the knife, absorbed by the knife? In the end, the question is whether it can mix with milchix. In fact, the entire prohibition of basar b'cholov is shnei minei heter, right? So what difference does it make that it was mutter when it was absorbed? Rava offers his own answer. And this is the one which occasions the comment of the drisha. Ella amar Rava, Hai efshar lemitameh, v'hai lo efshar lemitameh. The difference between the two cases of Rav Kahana is simple. The radish can be tasted first to see if the flavor of meat is present before mixing it with the dip, because it's mutter, right? Taste the radish to see if there's any taste of flations. Since the meat flavor is an usser, the kli, but the kli cannot be tested for the flavor of the dam, because the dam is usser. Of course, the obvious question, the Gemara asks it. So what about a kfeila, right? So the Gemara goes on to say that Rav Kahana's ruling only refers to where kfeila is not available. Now, what do we learn from this Gemara, and why does the Jerisha cite it? The Jerisha makes an application from the kli to meat that was purchased from a butcher. Umikan, this is the Jerisha, yesh lilmod pa'amim shekonim basar mina ketzavim. The ain yodea yadua im maluahu im lo usser litom bilshono. One may not, according to the tour, Drisha, use the tip of one's tongue to discern if there's a salty taste on the surface of the meat in order to determine whether it'd been salted. And obviously, we're talking about going to a spot where there's no surface blood, right? Okay. So the Taz questions this application of the Drisha. Fuhu tamua ma'od. Tahaba siman mem beis, seif beis. Gabe mara, which is the gallbladder. Kasaba mechaber, the Shulchan Aruch writes behejeb, befeirush. De toa mo bilshono. That you can taste it with your tongue. What are we talking about? So would that we had the time to study Treifus. To a certain degree, the modern Rav is deprived of the experience of linking with the Doros HaKadoshim V'Tahorim, who studied Shechita and Treifus B'Iyun. So wherever we have an opportunity to sample this Torah, and since I did study Treifus, let's take advantage. So we'll get a little taste of Treifus today. Rachmona Litzlan, not meant, a pun, okay. One of the Yud Ches Treifus, enumerated in the Mishnah at the beginning of the third parak in Cholin, is Nikva Hamara. If there's a nekev in the gallbladder, if the gallbladder is punctured. Now, a bladder in English is a pouch that's inflatable. Believe it or not, do you ever take off the skin, the leather of a football? The rubber thing inside that gets filled with air is called a bladder in English, right? In an animal, a bladder is a sac that serves as a collector for fluid or secretions. The mara, the gallbladder, is the pouch that collects the bile, the bitter secretion that comes from the liver. Okay. There are animals who do not have a gallbladder. I think a horse is one. Aristotle already lists animals which have a bladder and gallbladder and which they don't. In a kosher species that does not have a gallbladder, the lack of mara may not be a problem. We're going to talk about that. Most kosher species of animals do have a gallbladder, though. So as the Rambam writes in Hilchos Shechita, Perek Vav Halacha Chaf, Kol Eivar Shamar Nubo, any Eivar where we say, She'im Nikev B'mashu Treifa, that if it has any kind of hole in it, the animal's Treifa, Kachim Nital Kulo, then we say if it's taken totally away, it's Treifa, Bein shenital becholi obiyad, if it happened by an accident or it happened from illness. Bein shenivra chaser. The Rambam says if an animal that should have a gallbladder was created without a gallbladder, if any avar that we would say if it's punctured is potentially fatal and therefore the animal's trefa, then if the animal doesn't have it, it should also be potentially fatal, right? V'cheni nivra b'shnei avarim, meoso avar. And there's also a principle, right, that when an animal has an extra organ, it's a trefa. Shekol ha-yeser kenatol hu chashuv. Right? So the Gemara phrases it, kol yeser kenatol dame. Any extra organ is treated like one that was removed or missing. So, if the animal loses the gallbladder during its lifetime, according to the Rambam, it's trefa. The Hagahos Maimonios on the spot cites the Machlokas Haposkim in the case where the animals function perfectly well without a mara. So the Rivia, the 14th century Ashkenazic Posek who wrote the Avi HaEzri, which is an important off-cited work organized according to Masechtos that appears often in the Hagos HaSheri, the Mordechai, and the Hagos Maimonios, writes in Cholin that Rashi and all the Gedolim of that time in France, plus the Rif, considered the absence of a gallbladder not reason enough to render an animal a trefa. The Marshal writes in the Yamshel Shlomo that the Ravi is worthy of reliance in this matter. Now this is noteworthy, for he specifically ignores the contradictory opinion of the Rashba and his Juvas. How do you think the Beis Yosef winds up, the Mechaber winds up passing? Like the Rashba. Like the Rashba, right. The Rambam, the Rashba. We should have occasion to read one or two Chuvas of the Rashba later in this mind. They are Lefi Anius Dati, the model of how to write a Chuva. Okay. So the Shulchan Aruch, in the Siman and Trefos that's cited by the Taz, I think it's Membez, right? Decides that the animal is nevertheless a trefa if the gallbladder was removed or it's otherwise missing. He also is machmir when an animal has two, influenced no doubt by the Rambam and the Rashba. So this is a case where veterinarians might agree with the Radbaz that the only specific case of trefas where the gallbladder was functioning is perforated, thereby leaking bile onto the other organs, which is a lethal situation that's potentially fatal to the animal and therefore certainly sufficient to render it a trefa. So they don't make the application from the case in the Mishnah, which is nikva hamara, right? The Radbaz would say not to. The Rambam and the Beis Yosef would say, and the Rashba would say yes, and therefore missing, or there too, the animal's trefa. So the Shulchan Aruch proposes, however, even though he says if it's missing, it's trefa, he proposes a very interesting procedure that was first suggested by the Bahag. Remember, he comes from the Beis Midrash, as we've said, of the Baal Halachas Gedolos. And we're learning a lot of different inyanim here that we're going to see later in, and particularly in how to kasher a liver, which we will learn how to do. Okay? If the mara is missing, you make cross cuts on the liver called shesi ve'erev, right? Make an X cut. As we will see in Dine Tzlias HaKave. And then you taste with one's tongue to determine if there's a bitter flavor or not. So he says you can put your tongue on it and see if you taste bile. Why? If there is, then one has tasted the flavor of the bile and the animal's kosher. And if one doesn't taste it with the tongue, this is just what he's suggesting. I'll try to explain what the reasoning is. And if you don't taste it, you can still roast the liver on coals and then taste. The heat should draw out the bile. If one doesn't taste it, then the animal's a trefa.
Which means he tastes the trefa.
Which means, yeah, but it means the taste in the tongue is mutter.
Whereas that means you hold also the salt in the meat, you could lick the meat also.
So that's the application. So here, the Drisha learns simply from the words of Rava that you can't taste, you have to rely on kfeila. Therefore, he says, with the meat, you can't use your tongue. right? Come along the Taz.
Radish, sorry.
With the meat, you can't taste it. Because he says you can't put your tongue on the spot where there's no blood to see whether or not you taste salt. Okay? Because lechicha, or is just lechicha ba'alma, it's just licking, right? It's not te'ima. Te'ima requires some kind of ingestion. Come along the the Taz on the basis of the Mechaber and Treifas to say that you can use the tongue for te'ima, that constitutes te'ima too, at least explicitly in one case. Okay? Now, why this test? So it apparently comes to determine, one sec, if the gallbladder might be submerged within the liver itself, which is something that happens sometimes. Sometimes the gallbladder is inside the liver, right? So that would be what we're looking to see is whether or not the gallbladder was actually there, and whether or not there was it was functioning inside the liver. Yes.
I'm just confused. So the only time that the case would be to taste it is if you don't seal the gallbladder. Meaning, if you check an animal and you see that the gallbladder is punctured,
yeah,
you never get to that.
You never get to that point.
To that point. It would only be in a case where you don't find the gallbladder.
Right. Okay? So what's interesting here methodologically? From this discussion in the Shulchan Aruch and Treifas, the Taz challenges the Chiddush of the Drisha in the case of meat, which is Safek Maluach. Tasting with the tongue where there's a Safek Iser may be seen to be permissible from the Psak of the Mechaber in Chaseira Hamara in Hilchos Treifos. Right? It's a whole new level of sophistication in the abstraction of a din from another context.
So I'm just defining the teema differently. What is Shulchan Aruch considered just looking just to be not teema, or is the Drisha more liberal, even looking is considered teema?
I would say that too, but the Drisha already cited the Gemara that teema that uses the word lemitame, right? So he wants to say, I say that's actually ingestion too, because somebody's eating it. But but the distinction with the you want to say that unlike the Taz, you want to say that maybe. It's lechicha ba'alma is lechicha ba'alma in its own, and maybe that's sufficient, right? But I think it's clearly playing.
It's a problem, right?
Clearly playing off the Drisha's citation that Gemara where you can lemitame and where you can't lemitame, right? So I think that what he's defining is that where it's possible, where it would work with the tongue, that's mutter, and that's really not te'ima, right?
So for the Drisha, what case would that be?
I'm thinking it out. I'm sort of saying it out here. And let me just say, I think that you're right, but I think you're supporting the point. So all he's doing is attacking the. You could say more simply, like you. I could actually be Mekayim the Taz like you, and I could say he's just attacking the Drisha's psak. The Drisha's psak is that you can't taste. You can't use the tongue to taste whether or not there's salt. And he's saying, no, you can. Lechicha ba'alma works, like it works by Mara.
So again, it's ultimately the distinction between the Drisha and the Mechaber and the Taz is how you're defining the team.
And you could say it that way, too.
The Drisha is much more expansive, where you include even licking.
Right.
So the Drisha, so no situation would you ever be able to lick with your tongue to test anything at all?
Yes.
According to the Drisha.
Right. But they say yes. Okay.
And ultimately, so they want to hold up what we would call tasting isn't really tasting unless there's mamash going to be
ingestion,
some sort of ingestion.
Right. Right. So anyway, the point being, I would say like you, in a more precise way, like you, I would say then that the attack from the Sima Mem Beis is on the psak of the Drisha, the application of the Drisha of the Iser to Ima to apply also to the tongue. Okay? And he says yes, and the Taz says no, and the Taz has a precedent in the Inyan of Mara.
So how are the Minchat Chinuch who held the whole notion of eating the AFL process the notion of makes a sort of physical benefit, traditional benefit.
Because here we're not.
If Machaber defined Tima as just looking at it isn't.
No, well, that's why I like your formulation of it.
Definitely wouldn't have with Drisha. Drisha and Minchat Chinuch are definitely exclusive.
Yes, that's what.
Drisha Hova Tima is even looking, whereas Minchat Chinuch holds it can't be just looking at it to have some sort of.
No, all the Minchat Chinuch is saying is where there's an Isra Achila, right? Inami. Everybody agrees there's an Isra Achila here.
Correct.
Right? So what the only question is, right, is whether or not this licking counts as te'ima. I like the way you said it. Whether this licking counts as te'ima. Okay? So what we want to notice is how other areas of Issa v'Heter are brought to bear on a question that was facilely decided in the context of a single Gemara. Right? Okay, so let's summarize the Taz and the Halacha Lemaise for Te'ima Sakfela. When one buys meat, one may test with one's tongue a spot where there's no surface blood to test if the flavor of koshering salt is present. By the way, butchers today routinely salt all meat before selling it. Ignore my phone in the background. Second, Iser v'heter, the Taz also says, is technically not edus, and the Gemara in Bava Kama regarding Mesiach Lefi Tumo in edus Isha Bilvad does not come into play. A non-Jew tasting a taroves for Tama Disura is only Hochacha Ba'alma and not edus Gemura. Nevertheless, lehalacha, no non-Jew is reliable where there is an Iser D'Oraisa other than in Edus Isha Mishum Aguna. So note how we err on the side of the Aguna, right, in this halacha. Since Tam Ki'ikar in Sha'ar Isurim is D'Oraisa, following Rabbeinu Tam, E'al, Te'ima by non-Jew is out of the question. We're getting to the Ramah for Ashkenazi momentarily. Okay?
How does the Taz, why in this case, in Sivan Zarifet of Minamin Domino, why in that case do you need a.
Why does he?
Why do you need a, you know, Achila, like, you know, ingestion?
Well, only whether it would be effective or not, that's all. So, can you put your. Could you. Put your tongue on a vegetable and know whether or not if you ate it you would have the taste of meat in it or not? Of nevela, if our vegetables were cooked in gravy, would you be able to do that? Probably not, right? So I think it's a question of practicality. Now, there's an implication in the words of the Taz. Since he says we never rely in an Iser D'Oraisa on a non-Jew Mesiach Lefi Tumo, then that in an Iser D'Rabbanan, the Taz would rule that a Nochri Mesiach Lefi Tumo should be acceptable. Okay?
That's only the place you want to have more of a bit of Tom.
Right.
Exactly.
Yeah, but he's saying in other Isurim that would only be the Rabbanan, right? It should be mutter, not Tom Kikar, but other Isurim. There are other Isurim as well.
So according to Taz, even Mesiach would be Tumo is a problem with the Kfeila?
He would say, yes, we don't rely on a Nachri Mesiach Lefi Tumo.
Even Mesiach Lefi Tumo?
Yes, even Mesiach Lefi Tumo.
So is it with the Gemara that we saw where the Gemara seems to say that Kfeila be Matim?
He would say dafka kfela perhaps, okay. There's a little bit of a triangulation in the Taz that isn't precise, right? On the one hand, he says that it's not edus gemura. On the other hand, he says no non-Jews reliable where there's an Iser D'Oraisa.
So maybe we could just reformulate no regular non-Jew. Versus expert Fela, like Gemara, not a problem.
And like the Mechaber, right. So third, okay, now, after all our work in Perikita Nusha, Rashi, the Rush, the Sugi and Baba Kama, the Shach, the Drisha, and the Taz, might be disappointing now for Achenu B'nai Ashkenaz to discover the Haggah of the Ramah. But it's an important lesson in Psak. Look at the words of the Ramah in the Haggah. Ve'ein nohagin akshav lismoch agoy u'misharin akol b'shishim. Whole Indian out the window, right? The first source the Ramah cites is the Agur. Here's a little bit of historical trivia for you. The Agur is the first work to have a Haskama in the front. See Meir Benayahu in his book, Mosad Rav Kook book, a fascinating book, Haskama or Rishut B'Fusei Venezia, HaSefer HaIvri Me'et HaVato Litfus V'Atseito L'Or. Okay, and it tells the fascinating story of the publishers of the Sefer Agur, the Sonchino family in Napoli. The Agur was written by Rabbi Yaakov Landa. It's arranged topically, and you can actually find it on HebrewBooks.org. The second authority that he cites is Rabbi Meir Katz and Ellenbogen, the Maharam Mipadua. The Ramah sometimes refers to him as the Av Bezdin Medinas Venezia. So he was considered among the greatest Gedolim of the 16th century. He's a fascinating personality with a major controversy regarding the issuance of one of his works by a non-Jewish publisher in a cheaper edition. And eventually it led to a whole parsha with a pomus on the Gemara. He gave it to one publisher, another non-Jewish publisher, a second non-Jewish publisher, then stole it and printed the with Sefer with his Haggos. And it eventually led to a, I think it might have been the Rambam that he paid to put out. Yeah, it was the Rambam. And it led to all kinds of mumarim inciting the church against the Jews and the Talmud and all this kind of thing. It's a fascinating story. Okay, it's an interesting parsha in Hebrew publishing, just like the Haskama in the Agur. Right? A very interesting book to read is the put out by the Dituke Sofrim, Rabbi Nosson Netta Rabinovich Zatzal, who wrote a book on the printing of the Talmud, which is the first printing of the Talmud, and to know all the history of it. And you know, and when you delve into the history to see the that the Tosfos that are on the page, who actually chose to put them there. It's a great irony of Jewish history, right? The particular Tosfos that appear on the page, right? Since there are only a selection of many Tosfos that were available at that time. Okay? Now, we can make an important diuk in the words of the Ramah as the Shach himself does. What are the words of the Ramah? Ve'ein nohagin akshav lismoch a'oved kohavim. Implying dafka a Gentile, but not Te'ima in general. We can rely on Te'ima by a Jew in cases where it is heter for him, namely Truma to a Kohen, where someone has made a neder not to taste something, wine or meat, or when a knife was used to cut a radish, as we explained, maybe, right, for a Svardi to taste if there's the taste of kidney oat in something on Pesach, for an Ashkenaz, right? Or maybe for a Ben Eretz Yisrael to taste in Chutz La'aretz, right? No, that wouldn't work because it's Issa Ramashu, right? So it wouldn't work there. But certainly if somebody took a neder, it would work. Or Truma. Now, we're doing a rather thorough job on this first Siman. And it will, in Yirtzeh Hashem, pay off in the future as we're covering many Yesodos that will see us through the remainder of Yisra V'Heter. Right? So this is a pretty long one. This is the longest most material that we covered. And I want to continue just to do this first CMOD extraordinarily well, to know the svarim that are involved, and to sometimes look inside. Yes?
Just to clarify, studies for the Maran, for the Shulchan Aruch, not for the Ramat. Baruch Stegen holds ultimately that Tom Kiker and Sherry Stewart was not the Arata, and therefore that's why it's more legal when it comes to using Kriyla. Would that be consistent? I mean, Ramah is a Machrik, and those are Bin Tom. Those are Bin Tom. It's a D-Rate issue of Tom. If it's D-Rate issue of Tom, therefore you'd be very, very dubious using Goy. Whereas a Shulchan Maran will go, no, you can use a Kriyla.
So what you could say that if the Taz is correct, right, that we never rely, and we explained that Gemara, that we never rely, and it's based on the Ramah, I think it's in either Reish Yud Vav and Shin Yud Chet, we never rely on a non-Jew and an Isur D'oraisa,
yeah.
Right? So you could say then that Kfela, the Kfela Sugya might be a Raya, that Tam Ki Ikar, right, is only midrabanan.
Correct.
Right? That's what you want to say.
In Shari
Suri. Right. That's what you want
to
say.
When it comes to, you know, Chatzich and Asad, the Bible also, Maran also holds that there is no
right.
Chanan when it comes to Shari Suri.
Which we will get to.
I'm saying Lamaisa, though, do we have a bottom line with understanding how the Machab versus Ramah views Tamkikim and Duretzik versus Ramah?
Okay, we'll summarize the bottom line, everything next time. Okay?
Yeah.
Sorry?
For a mean machine.
Read the second Sa'if. He says if it's Nishbach.
Okay.
So what do we learn from Nishbach? We're going to do that next time. That's why I'm being evasive now. But
okay.
We're going to do it next time. If it's Nishbach and it's mean b'shei no mino, right? But you know that, what does he say? Well, read the Sa'if. What does he say? If you know that there was a, here, I'll read it. So if I have well even Nisare Beshainomino, Nishbach mean Shain Yukholing La Modalab, the Sharo, a filundash aya rubo heter usur. Why? Spake the Oraisa usur. So what does he seem to hold?
Based on that.
Im Nisare Bemino, or the next is Salig. Shainomino, right. Okay? So we're gonna do that next time. And we'll summarize the lacha well, and we'll see the shach and the prima gadim on the subject. Okay, so in the subjects, and I have another set of questions. Did I ever give out the smicha al t'imo, smicha al shishin questions? Anemonos, eno yehudi b'isav hatter. Okay, so I'll have to give those out as well. Okay, I have to send those around as well. And then anybody who wants to break this up, you can take the questions through the first two Sa'ifim. And that's a lot of Tarovas, believe it or not. The first two Sa'ifim with Tzadi S. And if you want, you can answer all the questions, study them, and take an oral Bechina, and you're a good part done with your Bechinos. So if you want to break this up, a lot of people find it a lot easier not to take one big Bechina at the end. I find it's much better to do it that way. And then we just have a schmooze at the end, put it all together, we'll answer some halakha questions. Okay? Yes?
Quick thing regarding the Ramah. When he says akshah, so maybe I'm just confused in terms of what he's trying to get at by saying that now. Meaning, is he saying from going forward, or can you read the Ramah saying, you know what, that which the Shulchan Aruch says is correct, but going forward, you can't rely on a Jew based off timing issues.
On a non-Jew.
I'm saying...
You want to know what the Akshav mean? Is it
yeah.
just for his period?
Yeah.
And could we return to another period?
Or going forward.
Right. Could we go back to another period and say now relationships are better and...
Or not necessarily. Can you say saying relationships were better in the past? Going forward, you can't.
Yeah, no, I was going to say... So what would be, it'd be easy to say we just follow the Ramah and say Akshav we don't, and Akshav means from the Ramah onward. That'd be an easy thing to say, right? The much more complex question is to say,
because the Ramah said it, does that become a fact on the ground, or in legal terminology, a legal formalism that I now have to deal with all the time, and that becomes the halakha? That's a real interesting question, right? So when the Ramah did, because, and what would be the tendency to, you know, we would want to say, would we want to avoid saying that it's a machlokas in the tzias if we could, and just say he was making a sociological observation, and therefore we can make a sociological observation as well, right? But that's what it seems to imply, that it's, you know, we fell out of the use of, you know, and I think it'd be a self-fulfilling precedent, right? But it's an interesting question whether or not there's a notion of precedent here that would, even if the situation is improved with non-Jews, will we, you know, now, practically, we're conservative people with a small state, right? So, practically, Ramah said Akshav, we still live in Akshav of the Ramah. Practically, that's the way most people.
It's a funny thing.
Thank you. Yeah. Well, I mean, you know, we certainly dress, talk, eat, and vote like the Ramah would. Yeah. I said ironically, right? But we live in the, we, you know, although I will note, by the way, that I was amused by a article in the local paper in Bergen County a couple of weeks ago by a conservative rabbi who was trying to write respectfully of the Orthodox and said, there is no such thing as Orthodox because there is Lubavitch, and there's this, and Haredi, and there's modern, and there's this, and there's this, and there's, you know, and whatever, so you can't castigate the Orthodox. It's just Jews. And, you know, I appreciate what he wrote, but I would say I found it a little gnarish, to tell you the truth, because there's one big difference between all Orthodox Jews, right? Whether bearded or not bearded, whether Nusach Ari or not Nusach Ari, right? We all keep Shabbos, we all keep Kashrus. We all daven three times a day, and we all think halacha is binding, even if we sometimes do evaders. We all regret that we do it. We all see halacha is binding. And it might be that my English might sound very much like a Reform rabbi, right? That he and I could talk, we might be able to play racquetball together, right? But I got a lot more in common in terms of lifestyle with Haredi, the most right-wing Haredi, than I do with the non-traditional, non-Orthodox Jew, no matter how congenial I might find their English discourse or their, you know, or their you know, language or lifestyle or let's say cultural lifestyle, no matter how many books they can quote and how much they've read and how similar I might sound in secular topics to them, in the end, my life, you know, davening, shmavening, right? You know, can I go, you know, intellectually, that's what he would say. He'd say intellectualism is what binds us. But I'd say, if I can't eat in your house, I can't daven with you. And when there's thunder, I got to explain why I mumbled something and stood up and mumbled something. Then I would say, maybe we're not so similar, right? You know, and I've got friends who are Satmar Hasidim, who, by the way, are fantastic Balei Chesed, B'nai Torah, and whatever, and don't sound like me. They grew up, they were both Native Americans, and their English is heavily accented, but they're a lot more like me than a Reform rabbi is. So I think, you know, let's not confuse the externals, right, with the internals. Right? And I would warrant you that I have a lot more in common in outlook with the Ramah than I do with President Obama. Even though President Obama and I look quite a lot alike. Right? Yeah. So maybe we do live in the Akshav of the Ramah. I was once, my late father-in-law was once told by somebody who went to MTA with, who became a major figure in the conservative movement, that your son-in-law is mentally ill because he wants to live in 16th century Poland. Right? And in many ways I do. I don't want to, you know, things are great here. We don't have to, you know, have, no Cossacks have visited my door recently in Tinek, right? I'm more usually hiding from the Shalafim than I am from the Cossacks, right? But the fact is, you know, I've got there's an unbroken chain, and I've got a lot, you know, more in common with them in terms of what informs my world, how it's built around Dalet Amos of Halacha, right? And I don't think that the accent in my English or the vocabulary that I use, no matter how much it might sound like a, you know, once went to a breakneck for YU when somebody wrote a letter back and says, even Rosh Hashiva who sounds more like Columbia than YU, he thought that was a good thing, right? My English might sound like Columbia. In fact, I went to Columbia, right? Might sound like that, but that's an external, right? That's just English vocabulary. That's all. That's the fact that I heard a Leibniz, right? Doesn't, you know, doesn't make me not, you know, a Ben Bais of the basis role. I live in the basis role, the Drisha and the Prisha, and even the Hagos, right? So, say from the Eris and Night, those are things that inform my life. So, I might have a lot of people in common externally with people who think the Drisha is Rabbi David Silber, right? But, you know, I might have a lot in common with them culturally, but I got more in common with those who know that the Drisha was the basis for all of our befall. Enough sermon.
That's actually pretty funny. The Drisha is Rabbi David Silber.
I was waiting for that. I was going to...
But you know my point. I say it with great respect for him. Right?